Information, please. Wake up, Mr. and Mrs. America. Time to stump the experts. Information, please, gives you a chance to turn the tables and make a profit at the same time. Send us questions and the correct answers. If acceptable to our editors, they will be presented to a board of experts for the first time during each broadcast. Any question accepted will win $2 for the person who submits it. Any question the experts cannot answer will win an extra $5. The contest will be refereed by our master of ceremonies, Mr. Clifton Fadiman, literary critic of the New Yorker magazine. Clifton Fadiman.
Thank you. Good evening, everybody. We have two old hands with us tonight and two new ones. The first old hand is Mark Duffield, day news editor of the Herald Tribune. And the other old hand is the irrepressible John Kieran, authority on baseball, bugs, buzz, and anything that anyone else claims to be an expert on. For the first time in the history of this program, we have with us a dyed-in-the-canvas expert on art, Mr. Thomas Craven, the distinguished author of Men of Art and Modern Art. Our second guest of honor, going to bat for Frank Adams, who's still in the hospital but doing nicely, thank you, is Ben Hesse. I don't need to tell you about Ben Hesse, wit, novelist, playwright, top-flight scenario writer, author of Nothing Sacred on the Front Page, and the other half of that famous team of Hess and MacArthur. Now, folks, confidentially, I expect a little trouble tonight. Mr. Craven told me that he knows more about sports than he does about art. And Mr. Kieran told me that he knows more about art than about sports. Maybe we'll prove them both wrong. Now, Mr. Duffield and Mr. Kieran, I want you to keep a special eye on Mr. Craven and Mr. Hess, who are our new boys. Please yell out at once if they show any sign of paralysis, fits, blood pressure, high blood pressure, or particularly amnesia. Finally, folks, remember that these questions are new to all of us. This program is as spontaneous as a baby's cry. Phrase copyrighted. I will address questions to the entire board. Any member who wishes to may raise his hand and do his earnest. The question must be answered by one member, except where it's composed of more than two parts, in which case the board may cooperate. But if any part is answered incorrectly, $5 is forfeited. When you hear that cash register sound, that means $5 is actually being paid out to the lucky questioner. And now, my four sages, sit up straight, take that glassy look out of your eyes, and let's see what you know or can guess. The first question comes from Mr. James Paternity, 53 Harrison Street, Jamestown, New York. There are three limericks. You'll have to complete them one by one. The first, there was a young lady of Niger who smiled as she rode on a tiger. They returned from the ride with the lady inside, Miss Craven.
And the smile on the face of the tiger.
That's the art expert. Very nice. Second, these get harder, boys. The poor benighted Hindu, he does the best he can do. He sticks to cast from first to last. Mr. Hesse.
He dared go near no window.
You know, I'll have to allow that. Did you think that up just out of your own head, Mr. Hess? Very clever, very clever. What's the classic ending, Mr. Craven?
For Patsy makes his skin do.
That's correct. Now, Mr. Hess, let's see what you can do with this next one. A lady there was of Antigua, who said to her spouse, "What a pig you are." He answered, "My queen, is it manners you mean?" A blank look, folks, a blank look. I'll do it again. A lady there was of Antigua, Mr. Hess is thinking very hard. No, there are no rhymes to Antigua, Mr. Hess. A lady there was of Antigua, who said to her spouse, "What a pig you are." He answered, "My queen, is it manners you mean?" I'll give you the first two words.
Or do you refer to my figure?
Very good, Mr. Mr. Hank, you can use this one next time that I just thought up. A lady there was of Antigua who said to her spouse, "What a pig you are." He answered, "My queen, is it manners you mean? Or the smell of my 2-for-5 figure?" All right. Enough of this frivolity. back to business. This one comes from Mr. Harry Kahn of Chicago. Name a democratic nation in which women may not vote and a dictatorship in which they may. You can't laugh that one off, gentlemen.
Well, a dictatorship in which they may is the United States.
No politics, Mr. Chairman.
Democratic nation in which they may not, I believe, is France.
That's correct. And a dictatorship in which they may, Mr. Duffield?
I'm coming to that. It's Germany.
Women may vote in Germany?
On the plebiscite, yeah.
On the plebiscite, yes. But generally?
Generally, I wasn't speaking.
No, I don't think that would be true. There is one other in which they may on, Mr. Hayes.
I think it's Turkey.
Oh, no. It's Russia.
It's Russia. And it's also Turkey. That's correct. The next one comes from Mr. John P. Marinaro, 21 Arsdale Terrace, East Orange, New Jersey. Now, here are seven words, and you're going to be asked to define six of them, and they sound more or less alike. I'll read them all at once and then read them one by one. You can get your heads together on this one, gentlemen. Swizzle, mizzle, nuzzle, oozle, frizzle, grizzle, and poozle. Now, that's all perfectly clear to me. First one, swizzle. Volunteer. Mr. Duffy.
That is a the name of a stick with which you stir a drink.
That's not quite correct. It is the drink itself. The stick with which you stir the swizzle is called the swizzle stick. You see? So I can't call you right on that. Mizzle.
How do you spell it?
M-I-Z-Z-L-E. All of these things are spelled with any number of Z's, Mr. Chairman. Mizzle. M-I-Z-Z-L-E.
Well, that's an old word for mist.
That's right. Don't go any further. You may get it wrong. Nuzzle.
Nuzzle?
Nuzzle, Mr. Hess.
Nuzzle is a soft, wet nose.
Yes. Correct. Oozle. Now, oozle is a tough one. O-U-S-E-L. Mr. Chair.
That's a cinch.
It's a cinch for you, Mr. Chair.
An oozle is a small bird that runs along water courses. It's common in the western part of this country.
Yeah, what's his second name and his father and mother's name?
Dipper.
Yes, that's right. Number five, frizzle. F-R-I-Z-Z-L-E. Frizzle. Mr. Hedge.
It's sort of an odd parfure.
Yes. How odd? How would you further describe it if you were paid for it?
It would be odd in Lapland.
It would be odd in Lapland?
Yes.
Why would it be odd in Lapland?
I think it pertains mostly to the South.
Yes, it's crisp or curled hair. That's correct. Six, grizzle. G-R-I-Z-Z-L-E. Here.
The way most of us are. Three out of four.
Three out of four are grizzle.
Grizzle.
Meaning what? See, the radio audience can't see you, Mr. Carey.
Oh,
that's their loss.
Gray hair.
Yes, gray hair. Well, you have a little gray hair. And Mr. Hank has a little hair.
You're exempting me. Three out of four. That's
yes, three out of four, more or less. All right. The last one is foozle, F-O-O-Z-L-E. These words are enough to make anyone dizzle. Foozle. Mr. Hank.
To make a small error.
In what game particularly?
Golf.
Yes, that's right. So it's a bundle. That's correct. I did get 6 out of 5. Mr. Louis J. Rougeon, 109 West 64th Street of the city, sends us the following question based on literature. Identify the master or mistress of 5 of the following 8 loyal servants in literature. Now, I'll read them all at once and then go over them one by one. Topsy, Sancho Panza, Prissy, Peggotty, Friday, Jeeves, Ruggles of Red Gap, and Miss Pross. Now, I think that's a sticker of a question. Identify the master or mistress of 5 out of those 8. We'll begin with Topsy. That I think we ought to be able to get if we work together very hard now, boys. Whom are you speeding to? Now, come on, one of you's got to answer this. All right, Mr. Hess.
I nominate Little Eva.
Little Eva is correct. Second, Sancho Panza. Mr. Kim.
Don Quixote.
That's correct. Three, Prissy. That's P-R-I-S-S-Y. Prissy's a tough one. Mr. Hay.
I can make a guess.
All right.
I think it's Louise.
Who is Louise?
Somebody invented by Miss Alcott.
Oh, Miss Alcott. No, I think I have to call that wrong offhand. Still, that's a nice idea. No, Prissy. Any of you got Prissy now? Prissy is a tough one. Prissy is the loyal servant, I presume, of Scarlett O'Hara. In that little book, Gone with the Wind. Four, Peggotty. Well, that's only one wrong so far. Peggotty, Miss Kieran.
I think that's David Copperfield.
Yes, that's right. Friday. Oh, that's easy. Miss Kieran, all right.
You love Stan. Robinson Crusoe.
Robinson Crusoe. Jeeves. Now, be careful. Jeeves.
He's
Craven.
He's the character in Woodhouse's famous song.
But you have to give us the master or mistress. Better stick to the master.
That's right. The Worcesters. Worcester.
Yes, Percy Worcester is correct. And seven, Ruggles the Bread Guest. That isn't so easy. Think of the picture if you haven't read the book. Think of the book if you haven't seen the picture. Have I got you thoroughly confused, gentlemen?
Yeah, we're all thinking of Charles Lawton now.
Mr. Duffield.
We're all thinking of Charles Lawton, and that gets us nowhere.
No, that gets you nowhere. If you like to think of Charles Lawton, that's perfectly all right with me, but doesn't fit into this program. Very nice man, Mr. Lawton. Help the boys along now. Oh, you wouldn't get it. You wouldn't get it. So I wouldn't get it myself. I didn't have it written down here. The Honorable George Augustus Vane Basingwell. Try that one. All right, that's two wrong. Now the last. Miss Pross, P-R-O-S-S.
Miss Pross.
This is Mr. Kieran talking.
Miss Pross is in A Tale of Two Cities.
That's right.
And she was the nurse to Lucy, who married the...
Lucy was a small southwestern thrush. That's correct. The next one from Miss Leah Winters of Detroit. Name four comedians of the talkies who are noted for not talking, but who nevertheless roll the audience in the aisles. To use the parlance of your trade, Mr. Hank? Name four comedians of the talkies who are noted for not talking, but who nevertheless roll the audience in the aisles. Four of them.
Give two, Harpo Marx and Harold Lloyd.
Harpo Marx, Harold Lloyd.
Harold Lloyd. He talks now, but not very well.
But that's, you see, we're not asking for criticism, but just facts.
Just spontaneously.
No, I'll take Harpo, but I don't think I'll take, I don't think I'll take Harold Lloyd. I remember him talking. I'll take Harpo. That's one.
Chaplin.
Chaplin's correct. That's two. I want two more. Give me two more, gentlemen. Give me two more. You're thinking hard, folks. Fairly hard. I'm not at all sure about that. Maybe they're not thinking at all. Two more.
How about Fatty Arbuckle?
Doesn't talk anymore, but at one time he did talk. Nope. There are two more. Dopey would be one.
Buster Keaton.
Buster Keaton talks, I think, doesn't he?
No.
Buster Keaton. I'll allow Buster Keaton. Well, I'm afraid I'll have to call $5 on that one.
Felix the Cat.
$5 on that one. You could have named Dopey. You could have named, as a matter of fact, Charlie
Evans. Seventh Waltz. Be three over.
I beg your pardon?
Could have named the Seventh Waltz and be three over.
They talk in a sense.
Somebody talked for them.
Nope. I think we got three out of those four, that's all. From Miss Mary Ferris of 227 Oak Street, Indian Orchard, Massachusetts, comes the following question. This is derived from art. Name the famous artists who are associated with the following subjects. And there are six of them. And this is a pretty tough question because we have to get all six of them. Now, you may cooperate on this. The first subject is street urchins. Famous artists associated with street urchins.
George Lutz.
I beg your pardon?
George Lux.
George Lux. Mr. Craven, is that correct?
That's correct.
All right, you boys aren't working together, are you?
J.G. Brown was another one.
Yes, of course they aren't the two I have down here. You put me in a bad spot. I'll have to allow that, but they tell me it's Murillo and Rivera. Would that be correct, Mr. Craven?
Guerrilla would be correct, and Goya would be correct, too.
Don't like Rivera.
No, that's not
expert. All right, you're an expert. You're running the art part. two ballet dancers. Raise hands, gentlemen. Ballet dancers.
Ballet?
Ballet, yes. Ballet. B-A-L-L-E-T. Mr. Craven.
Degas.
Degas would be correct. Third, a prize fight. A prize fight, Mr. Craven.
George Bellows, primarily.
Yes. Fat ladies. Mr. Craven.
Peter Paul Rubens.
Yes, I can think of a one or two more on fat ladies.
Renoir.
Renoir, yes. Any more on fat ladies?
All old-fashioned artists.
All old-fashioned artists.
Possible.
Well,
Peter Arno, maybe. But certainly Rubens and Renoir would be the class example of painters who painted fat ladies. And how about lean ladies? Lean ladies. Mr. Heck.
Arthur B. Davies.
Arthur B. Davies. They were sort of lean, weren't they? Mr. Craig, would you accept Arthur B. Davies as a lean lady painter?
He painted fairies, I think, or wraiths. They're not...
Yeah, well, they're reasonably thin.
Yes, they're over-dieted.
I think I'll have to accept that. But what would you say, Mr. Craven?
Whistler would be a good example.
Who?
Whistler.
Whistler paints very lean ladies. Would El Greco be acceptable?
He painted everybody.
He didn't paint many ladies, though.
He didn't paint many ladies. There is one, an Italian, who is famous for painting rather consumptive-looking ladies.
Modigliani.
Modigliani, that's correct, Mr. Heck. The boys are pretty clever. Now, the last one's a tough one. Melting pocket watches. I suppose that's how we get the expression the flow of time. Mr. Craig.
Salvador Dali.
Salvador Dali is correct. Mr. Craven, just off the record, you wouldn't want to give us your opinion in one word of Dali, would you? Two words.
Showman enough.
Showman enough. Three words. That's very good. The next question from Warren W. Miller, 43 High Street, Pottstown, Pennsylvania. Name four book titles containing the name of a food. Four book titles containing the name of a food. Raise hands on that, gentlemen. Mr. Hay.
Salt by Mr. Norris.
Salt by Mr. Norris is correct. Mr. Craig.
Bread by Mr. Norris.
Bread by Mr. Norris is correct. Now, if you can get a third one by Mr. Norris with the name of a food in it, you'll get the $5. There is a third one by Mr. Norris containing the name of a food. In fact, the name of two foods, by gosh. Well, it's pig iron. Now let's have two more. I'm really not in there. Two more contain the names of foods.
Well, I'll give you a rare one. There's a book by Felipe Trigo, a South American, called Wheat.
Never heard of it, but I'm positive that you're an honest man, Mr. Craven. That's third. Now, Mr. Hay.
The wheat pit.
Yes, the wheat pit. There are four. There are lots about the five little peppers and how they grew, for example. And what is the matter with Hamlet? They don't like that, folks. They don't like that. Give you another one. I don't care. How about George Eliot's masterpiece, The Melon and the Floss? You know, The Melon and the Floss? And how about the late Pulitzer Prize winner, the late George Appleby? Isn't that the name of a book? See, we know a lot this evening. For Mr. Ben A. Williamson of 3535 Glencairn Road, Shaker Heights, Cleveland, Ohio, comes the following question. Now, this is a one-man question, divided into two parts, but one man has to answer both parts. If you don't know the complete answer, for heaven's sake, don't raise your hand. One, what stops did Howard Hughes make in his round-the-world flight in their exact order? That's the first question. You think about that for a minute. And the second question is, how many Americans have completed a round-the-world flight since 1932? That is, since the end of 1932. Very melancholy situation.
Nobody else seems to be volunteering.
All right, Mr. Duffield.
I'll start out with Mr. Hughes.
Now, the stops?
The first stop was Paris. The second stop was Moscow.
Correct.
The third stop was Omsk.
Correct.
The fourth stop was Novosibirsk.
pronouncing that right. It might be Irkutsk.
Yakutsk is correct, yeah.
And,
sounds more like an interruption. Stop. Go ahead, don't let me stop you.
The next stop was Fairbanks.
Correct.
The next stop was Minneapolis.
Correct.
The last stop was Floyd Bennett Field.
That's correct. And second, how many Americans have completed a round-the-world flight since 1932?
You mean apart from Howard Hughes and his gang?
I'm asking you a question. Don't you ask me questions.
All right, there were five in his plane. That's five.
That's correct. That's right. How many in all have completed a round-the-world
flight? One other man who was Wiley Post.
Wiley Post in 1933 is correct. That's right. I suppose you might figure Mr. Corrigan, who reached Ireland via California. Must have been around the world. Frankly, folks, I thought that was a pretty tough one. When we got to that Omsk and Yakutsk and Irkutsk and Novosibirsk, I thought we were going off the track. But he got it. Mrs. Bunny Lawton, 3900 10th Avenue, South Birmingham, Alabama, sends us the following. Give the line of verse that immediately precedes each of the following lines of verse. Precedes. Now, there are four, five altogether. One, a poem lovely as a tree. Mr. Chair.
A sight that I shall never see.
Neat word, Mr. Chair. Two, whether 'tis nobler in the mind to suffer. Mr. Craven.
Be or not to be.
Ah, to finish the line.
That is the question.
Good work. Third, and burnt the topless towers of Ilium. Mr. Chair.
Was that the face that launched 1,000 ships?
Yes. Was this the face that launched 1,000 ships? Four, I'm sure we should all be as happy as kings. Miss Craig.
The world is so full of a number of things.
That's right. And finally, this is the one that's going to stick you. Come again another day. Mr. Hay.
Rain, rain, go away.
Wasn't that sweet? Well, we'll have to do better than this. We're only down $5. I can usually get them down to about 20 if I work hard. Let's go. The next one is from Mr. J.L. Gordon, 1216 Denison Avenue, Pittsburgh, PA. Question, can you and why? Answer four out of the five. Can you catch silverfish with hook, line, and sinker? Volunteers. Can you catch silverfish with hook, line, and sinker?
Probably need bait.
Don't try to trip me up, Mr. Chair. Your answer would be yes, then, to that, Mr. Chair.
No, I refuse to answer by advice of counsel.
Oh, is that man you have next to you a counsel? No, the answer is no. Why can't you catch silverfish with hook, line, and sinker? I will tell you. Silverfish is an insect, not a fish. Second, that's one wrong. You've got to answer all the others right. Can you eat an alderman for dinner? Can you eat an alderman for dinner?
You have to be pretty hungry.
You have to be pretty hungry. Is that a yes or a no, Mr. Chairman?
How do you spell that alderman?
Just like an ordinary alderman.
Well, you can't
A-L-D-E-R-M-A-N.
You can't eat a New York City alderman.
No, that's pretty tough. Besides the city councilors, we have no more aldermen. Mr. Hay.
Mr. Seabrook ate an alderman, I remember, in a recent book of his.
Mr. Seabrook? Mr. Willie Seabrook?
Yes. He ate aldermen in Africa.
A real African alderman?
Yes.
Wasn't that pleasant of Mr. Seabrook? You're still avoiding the answer to the question. Any of you gentlemen know the answer to the question? I think we've got it. The answer is yes. You can eat an alderman for dinner because an alderman is often used as a humorous name for a turkey. Mr. Hess, you are the author of many plays. You ought to know what a turkey is. Third. Can you find a mustache on a bird? Can you find a mustache on a bird?